Órale pues, Razo, welcome back to Chicano Highlights. Our special feature today is Paulina Jaramillo. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, thank you.
And tell me a little bit about yourself. Where are your parents from?
My parents and I and several ancestors go back to New Mexico.
Which city?
Well, we lived on a cattle ranch, and it was about 60 miles west of Socorro, New Mexico.
All right. And you grew up there your entire life?
Yes.
All right.
Eventually, we moved from the ranch closer to Albuquerque, and it was a little town called Belen. And then we were there about 4 years and moved to Albuquerque.
All right. And how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have 7.
All right. Big family, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Now, where did you go to school? Elementary, middle, high school?
Elementary, I started where we lived on the ranch. There was a little village about 6 miles, and the name of the little town was Horse Springs. And then when we moved to Belen, I went to the elementary school there, and eventually middle school and high school in Albuquerque.
All right. And in high school, were you an A student, F student, what?
Somewhere in between. I would say B minus.
All right. And are you of Mexican descent?
Mixture, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell me how were people of Mexican descent, Spanish speaking, treated?
Well, when we were living in the ranch and on the community surrounding, most of us were Latinos, and we were close. It was a lot of people were related either by marriage or by blood. And so I really didn't know anything about prejudice, racism, anything like that. When we moved to Belen and later to Albuquerque, that was a different story.
Well, tell me about it.
Well, I remember being in the public school in elementary. It was probably third grade. And whenever there was anything missing in the classroom, it seemed that we were always suspect. And they would always question us first. And if we spoke in our defense, then oftentimes we were seen as being insubordinate for speaking back.
Mm-hmm. And in high school?
High school was better. It mm-hmm. was a bigger city. It was in Albuquerque. And there were quite a few, Latinos in the area. And we kind of fit in better and kind of just blended.
Mm-hmm. What high school was this?
The name of the high school was Rio Grande.
All right. And what made you think about college?
Well, I actually did not seriously consider college until I was married. In my family, education was not encouraged. My father had been self-made, and to him, education was not a priority as long as he could read, write, and do simple arithmetic. And none of my brothers or sisters graduated from high school, and none of them went to college, although all of them have been very successful in their fields, and that's skilled labor.
Okay. Now, you say your father was a self-made man. What did he do?
Well, he was a cattle rancher.
Mm-hmm.
And basically did all that's required on a cattle ranch. And, he sold his stock twice a year, and that's how he made his money.
Okay. So you graduated high school, and what did you do? Did you go directly to get a job, or did you get married?
No, I got a job, and I worked for probably 4 or 5 years. I did receptionist work, the basic, answering the phone, filing, and I worked for different businesses.
Mm-hmm. And how long did that, was about 5 years?
I would say about that, yeah. I got married when I was 20,
mm-hmm.
and almost 21.
Okay. Let me ask you in advance, are you still married to the same individual?
No.
Okay, all right. So then let's go back. So then you got married, and let me ask you a question. Did you have children?
Yes, I have 2 children. And after my second one, we were living in Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a private college there, a small town. It was called Nampa. and I visited the grounds. I had always wanted to get higher education. I just had never had the opportunity. So when I visited the grounds and talked to some people there, I thought, oh, you know, maybe I can enroll here. And so I talked to my husband at the time, and he was agreeable. So I enrolled in their AA program. And I was going part-time because I had a family. I was not working outside the home, but I was, you know, busy raising my kids and providing a home. And so it took me 3 years, but I got my AA in behavioral studies.
Which is what? Tell me what behavioral studies is.
Well, it's a combination of psychology and sociology.
Okay, all right. So he was agreeable, and he didn't have a problem with you going to school?
No, not at all.
Okay. Now, I think we missed something. You had two kids, boys or girls?
I had a boy first, and mm-hmm. then 3.5 years later, a girl.
Okay. All right. And so then you got your AA degree. Now, what did you do with it?
Well, there was not a whole lot to do with my AA degree. What happened is shortly after that, we were divorced, and I moved back to California,
mm-hmm.
and I started working as a substitute teacher, and I liked that job because I was gone at the same times that my kids were gone in school, and I was home when they were home, so that enabled me to continue, you know, providing care for them.
And is that, now how long did you do that?
I did that for maybe 2 years. And then I remarried.
Okay. And so you remarried, second husband.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you do then?
Well, basically, I was just providing a home for mm-hmm. my family.
Mm-hmm.
And then when my son was in, I believe he was in junior high and middle school, and my daughter was in elementary, I decided that I wanted to pursue my education further. So I enrolled at Cal State San Bernardino, and I enrolled in the psychology program.
Mm-hmm. How long did that take you?
That took me, I believe it was another 3 years, and I got my BA in psychology.
All right. And so what did your parents and your family think about you going back to school and getting an education? A woman that, you know, it's not customary for a lot of women to go to college, especially, you know, back in, what, the 60s, 70s?
Yeah. When I got my BA, it was, I think, 87, 88.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, you know, I think they were proud of me. They were supportive. No one said anything negative. They just thought it was just something that I was pursuing, and they didn't say a whole lot either way.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds like my family too.
Whatever you do, you know, you're going to do it anyway.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely. Okay. So then what's the next step?
Well, there was actually not a divorce, but a separation, and we were separated for several years, and I decided sometime in there that I wanted to go on with my education. I wanted to get a master's. And at that time, my son was in last year of high school, and so was, and my daughter was not far behind. But by the time I enrolled in college, my son had graduated from high school and was enrolled in college. So the three of us were in college together at one point. First, my son and I were in college together. And then when my daughter, who graduated early from high school, joined us, the three of us were in college.
Oh, wow. Well, that's interesting. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, yeah, because they have that role model to follow. And also, at the same time, you're helping them with their homework and, mm-hmm. and helping them through the rigorous hoops of university life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, here's an interesting story. I'm not real good in math, okay? Mm-hmm. So whatever I had learned in high school, I'd long forgotten.
Yes.
And I needed to have not only the basic math requirement, but because I was in psychology, I needed to have classes in statistics. And my son and my daughter both tutored me in math. to help me get through the classes. And then I helped my daughter with Spanish because she was taking Spanish. And my son, I sometimes helped him with his essays and, you know, different writing assignments that he had. So really, we helped each other.
It really became a family affair.
Mm-hmm. And we were all working part-time mm-hmm. and going to school.
Mm-hmm.
And our education was, well, the finances that we got for our education was through grants and scholarships.
Right, right. Which is very important for, you know, the humble, the poor mm-hmm. That can't afford universities, especially in today's economic problems. So then, what did you do after you got your BA?
Well, after I got my BA, I started working, and my son and daughter were, my son had graduated also, and my daughter was in college, and I was working doing various things. I was working in home health care, for one thing, and then I was also hired to be a sort of companion for a foster child that was being adopted by a family, but he had been born with fetal alcohol syndrome,
mm-hmm.
and his motor skills and language abilities and all of that were below where they should have been. And so I worked with him with games and activities and, you know, took him out to community events and that were appropriate for his age. And I continued doing that, and then eventually I enrolled in graduate school.
Okay. And then tell me about graduate school.
Oh, my major was rehabilitation counseling,
mm-hmm.
and that took me 3 years also. And my daughter and I graduated the same day from the same college, different majors. My major was rehabilitation counseling, and hers was business with an emphasis in marketing.
Wow. Okay. So what is rehabilitation counseling? Tell me.
Well, it's vocational rehabilitation counseling. You work with people that have various disabilities, and a lot of people that get this degree go on to work for the state of California.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed that my career took a different turn. I worked more with kids that were at risk
mm-hmm.
with different agencies, you know, as a family specialist, just different titles.
Yes. So with all of that knowledge, what did you decide to do with all of that knowledge?
Well, I decided, let me go back just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
When I was still enrolled in graduate school, I decided that I wanted to try writing. So I wrote essays and, you know, I did op-eds for the newspaper and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found out about the Inland Empire Hispanic News, and Graciano Gomez was the publisher-editor. So I got to know him and talk with him and then submitted some of my writing. And he liked what I'd written and published it, and then I wrote for his newspaper for about 7 years.
Wow.
And I did profiles of successful community leaders that were Latinos. Now, the paper is no longer being published. He's retired now. But I think it was running for about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an English language newspaper, and it's positive in the sense that it doesn't deal with crimes or, you know, the ugly negative things in life. It's more to encourage Latinos and to provide a role model. And I did profiles on successful community leaders. I also did some political issues like immigration. I wrote about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was what's called a contributing writer. I was not on staff.
Right, right. Yes. Okay. Well, that sounds very interesting. So that gave you another outlet.
Yeah. And one of my assignments, and it was in the early stages when I had just started working for him, he asked me if I could write something that along the lines of the contributions of Hispanics to the development of the American Southwest. And of course, I said yes, not knowing how much mm-hmm. work it would entail. Mm-hmm. Well, I researched. At that time, I wasn't on the internet, or I don't even know if the internet was running. This was in the probably early 90s. And I read about 20 books and took notes and compiled the article, and it wound up being a 3-part series.
Wow. That's very good.
Yeah. A lot of people that read it thought that, you know, I had brought out a lot of historical facts that they had not known previously.
Mm-hmm. And so then what was your next step?
Well, after that, I continued to work at different jobs, different agencies, and continued writing. I wrote also for Latina Style magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And for them, I did some entertainment. One of the feature stories that I wrote was called Latina Knockouts, and it was about female boxers that were Latinas.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did an article on that, and I interviewed two. And the way I did the article was I wrote it from a perspective of their everyday life. And then, of course, I talked about their career in boxing. But I made it to where they were not seen as just boxers, but they were seen as women with their lives and their, you know, background as citizens, and females that had homes, husbands, children.
Mm-hmm. And so then you decided when to publish.
Well, it wasn't until about 3 years ago that I decided maybe I should write a book. And we had had, unfortunately, several deaths in our family, my extended family. There was my mother, my stepfather, and my sister-in-law died within 10 months of each other.
Right.
And then sometime after that, there were others. There was a brother-in-law. And there have been 3 nephews.
Right.
And so with my degree in psychology and counseling, I wanted to put something together that addressed the pain that people go through when they lose a loved one. And I wrote 2 books. And the first one was called A Time to Heal. And the second book is Life Interrupted. And the second book really is just... because the first book was a book set, and it's hard to distribute a book set. So an editor suggested that I rewrite the book and make it a single book.
Mm-hmm.
But I wound up adding to the second book, I added helping others after your healing is complete. And I added a resource page mm-hmm. where people can go to on the web. And other books that have been published on the same topic.
Wow. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, when was this published? What year?
This was published in 2009.
Okay. So it's very recent.
Yes.
Okay. And any other books?
No. Well, my third book, my most recent one, is The American Southwest,
mm-hmm.
Pride, Prejudice, and Perseverance.
Mm-hmm. And that was published when?
Really, it just came out this month. I did a pre-trial, a pre-run, you know, same title, but a different cover. And that came out in 2010. And I immediately decided to pull that out of circulation and add more research and change the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And I increased it by about 18 pages with more recent research.
Mm-hmm.
And I included the foreword by a professor at Cal State San Bernardino, where I graduated from with my bachelor's and my master's.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Dr. Tom Rivera.
Yes.
He reviewed the book, liked it. He wrote a foreword. So that also encouraged me to put out a new edition so that I could include his foreword.
Oh, good. Great. Congratulations again.
Thank you.
All right. So do you plan to write more books?
Well, yes, I probably will. I don't have a definite topic in mind, but And I'm just trying to reach out to people with the message that I've written in these two books. And I'm busy with that right now.
Okay, so tell me about the third book here. Give me some kind of description, because, I mean, the title is very, very wide, as they say, mm-hmm. very generic mm-hmm. In many ways. So tell me just a little bit about the book.
Well, the book starts out with a brief overview of the inhabitants of the Southwest, starting with the ancient Native Americans, you know, the Anasazi, the Mogollon, the Hohokam, and it just briefly talks about their existence. I don't focus on that. Then I cover the Spanish and the Mexican era, mm-hmm. and the Treaty of Hidalgo, and that was the point where then the U.S. began to make their presence known.
Mm-hmm.
And I go into the next section, which is called Turmoil and Immigration, and I talk about the conflicts that were going on in Mexico after they had won their independence from Spain to set up a new government. And there was, you know, a lot of economic and political problems. And part of that, but also the fact that a lot of agents from the United States were going to Mexico and actively pursuing labor to come to the U.S., and so between all the chaos that was going on in Mexico and then the labor agents luring them to the U.S., immigration began to really pick up from Mexico to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically that, you know, Section 2 deals with that. And I also mentioned the World War I and World War II, and a lot of Mexicans and Latinos served in the wars with honor. In World War II, there were 13 American Congressional Medal of Honor winners, and that's the highest medal that you can get.
Right.
I also talk about the deportation that took place during the Great Depression. Okay. That's when Herbert Hoover, who had earlier recruited, you know, not him personally, but he opened it up to make possible for Mexicans to come over. He lifted the restrictions that were in place for them to come over to the U.S. Well, now in the early 30s, he was president and decided that the laborers that were here from Mexico were taking up jobs that the U.S. veterans needed. So he okayed the deportation. And what's amazing, and a lot of people don't realize, is that about 60% of the people that were deported were American citizens. They used Gestapo-style methods. They didn't bother to screen people or use due process. And a lot of people that were deported were citizens. Some of them were children that had been born here. And, of course, the parents didn't want to break up the family, so they took the children, but others were actual outright citizens.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is very interesting, huh?
It is, and it's very eye-opening, because this is not something they'll teach you in public schools.
Exactly. Now, so you cover the 60s, 70s, 80s, all the way to the 2000s?
Actually, yeah, Section 3 then talks about the Bracero Program, the Zoot Suit Riots, the National Farm Workers Association, the Chicano Movement, and a little bit about the traditional family and the changing roles.
Mm-hmm.
The family is becoming less and less central mm-hmm. to the everyday, you know, Latino, because so many things are changing in the society, you know, with the global economy and things happening. But one thing I did find is that there is still a real strong racial affiliation. Latinos have that still as a core to who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also went to the section on beyond the Chicano movement, and I talk about anti-immigration sentiments from the 1960s through the 1990s. And then immigration in the 21st century and the Browning of America. And I cover the SB 1070 and give, you know, facts and where it's at this at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the Judge Bolton, who blocked some of the components that the law would require the police to do. And I end up in that section with the fact that Jan Brewer, Governor Jan Brewer, will probably continue to pursue it, and it may come before the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the last section has to do with Latinos and education. I talk about the historical school segregation and the court cases, and the legal history of bilingual education in California. It's basically swung back and forth. First of all, there used to be school segregation where schools were allowed to separate, you know, and have schools that they considered Mexican schools and then white schools. But that ended after there were a couple of court cases, and then with the Brown versus Board of Education, okay, which eliminated that. And then I go into more current, and I quote a study that was done by the Eric Clearinghouse on urban education, and it's a very, very thorough study. It talks about Latinos from kindergarten through graduate school, and it gives facts and where the Latinos stand. And unfortunately, Latinos are on the low end of being, you know, successful in school. There is a gap. And I include a Pew Hispanic Center research or survey that was done in 2009 about the attainment gap. And they surveyed 2012 Latinos between the ages of 16 to 25. And one reason that they found out, the biggest reason that they don't pursue higher education, is because they feel a financial pressure to support their families. That was the biggest reason.
Exactly, yes.
Some of the other reasons included, either language problems or thinking that they didn't need higher education to get a job or the job they wanted. But both of those are very thorough, the studies, the surveys, and very eye-opening, because it gives us knowledge as to how to address this problem, how to get more Latinos in school, how to encourage that. And one thing they found is that kids that have parents that have at least graduated from high school, if not gone on to college, they're the ones that are more likely to pursue a higher education. So role modeling is really important.
Exactly. Yes. Very, very interesting. And so they can get these books are available where?
Well, the book is available through Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also available through my website. And my website is www.theamericansouthwest.net.
All right. And this is your host, Beto. You're listening to Chicano Highlights. And we are speaking with a publisher, Miss Paulina Jaramillo. Is there any last closing thoughts, a message that you want to give out there to the young ladies?
Well, yes, I would say pursue higher education, and whatever obstacles are in your way, you can overcome them. For me, I had various, okay, but little by little, it took me actually 10 years to get a master's, because it took me 3 years to get an AA, 3 to get a BA, and 3 to get a master's. But in between that, I had to do some math classes, you know, remedial classes to get to the point where I needed to be. And I got tutors, and my son and my daughter tutored me, and I got tutors also at Cal State. But I got to where I needed to be, and I never lost sight of my goal. And you can do it. You can make it. It may take a while, and you may have to get help, but hang in there.
Yes, and exactly. And at the same time, you were living life. You got married. You got remarried. You had children. You brought them up, and that all takes a lot of time, too.
It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of commitment. And like I was saying to some of my friends, you know, this time is going to pass anyway. I'm going to do what I want to do, where I want to be 5 years, 10 years from now. So I'm going to set a goal. And if it takes me longer to complete than it does most people, well, that's the way it is. But I'm not going to quit.
Exactly. So that's why young ladies need to think twice before they do get married, before they do have children, that they should run out, get their career first, mm-hmm. and then start, you know, the marriage and the kids and all of that. It financially speaking, it works out a little better, ¿verdad?
And I totally agree with that. And I wish I'd had that opportunity to go to college first, get my career set, and then think about a family. It didn't happen that way for me because I graduated from high school in the mid-60s. And at that time, especially for Latinas, college was not, you know, a thing that you did.
Yeah.
But for those that have gotten married and still would like to pursue an education, I say, yes, you can do it. It will happen. I was actually 49 years old when I got my master's.
Wow. And it says something about people, you know, that at especially at the community college level and at the university level, that people come in at all ages. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen 80-year-old mm-hmm. people come back to college to get another degree.
Mm-hmm. And I say to, you know, not just Latinas, but to everybody, start where you're at. If all you can do is take one class, you know, one day a week, start there and keep thinking about adding to it and continuing with that class, finishing and trying another, and get support. Get people, surround yourself with people that will encourage you.
Exactly. All right, so once again, where can they purchase your book?
It's available on Amazon.com and through my website, www.theamericansouthwest.net.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming in and participating with us, and hopefully you'll come back again.
Thank you very much for having me. This has been very enjoyable.
All right. That's going to do it for us. This is your host, Beto. You've been listening to Chicano Highlights, and I will see you. Hasta la próxima, raza. Ahí te guacho.